Hello, and welcome to the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper, primary edition for July 2019. I'm Joyce, one of today's readers. Our thanks go to Goffby Music, who has allowed us to play the piece of music you have just heard, which is called Just Jasmine. The news items come from this week's edition of the Hearts Advertiser. Here is my first news item. The title is Site Owner Pledges to Keep Noise Down. A festival site owner has promised that a fitness event will not disrupt St Albans residents following a wave of noise complaints about a drum and bass gig last weekend. When the inaugural Tear Out Fest came to Springfield Farm on Old Parkbury Lane from June the 28th to 30th, the heavy drum and bass music could be heard miles away in St Albans City. St Albans District Council received more than 75 complaints about pounding bass from the festival, which was scheduled to be open into the early hours. Areas affected included Sopwell, London Coney, Brickett Wood, Chiswell Green, Park Street, Redbourne, Markgate and Bernard's Heath. Site owner Vic Josh said stage sound regulators ensured the volume was kept to an acceptable level. However, one of the stages didn't have that, and the DJ decided to go wild. He thought he was in Ibiza. Vic stressed that the music was turned down for Saturday and Sunday, and it was not registering on any equipment for a 360-degree mile radius. He apologised for any distress to local residents. The sound hopped over the 360 area and landed in St Albans. Some people said, maybe it happened because I'm on a lower ground and St Albans is higher ground. Or atmospheric pressure, but irrespective of why, it did happen. Later in the weekend, it was reduced to half a level that we could hardly hear it in the house, and we are right next door. Awaiting a debrief with the District Council, Vic has been told he was in breach of his licence. Springfield Farm is the site for about 6 or 7 events each year, but Vic said Tear Out Fest will probably not return. Vic is worried that he will lose his licence following what happened. It's scary and I'm apprehensive because we don't know what the next stage will be until the review is done. I'm hoping that they don't give us a big fine. I've learned that maybe it is not a good idea to open until 2 a.m, his licensing hours. Maybe I will make sure the next time it will be closed at 11 p.m. I've learned never to do drum and bass gigs. There is another festival being held at Springfield Farm this weekend from the 5th to the 8th of July. And Vic reassured everyone that there will be no further problems. There will be at least 200 exercise classes on offer at Hearts Fit Fest, including Zumba, Clubber Size, Pole Dance, Aerial Skills, Hoop, Boot Camp, Trampoline, Pilates, Yoga, Power Wave and Kickboxing. Only 3 acts will be performing in the evening, Shola Ama, Sweet Female Attitude and DJ Lex Beats. Vic said, it is such a shame as a small business. I understand why people were complaining, as they're sensitive to noise, and I don't want people to worry about Hearts Fit Fest. It's going to be a really good fitness festival with lots of classes. He said the music will be turned off no later than 12:30 a.m. Founder of Hearts Fit Fest, Emma Sills, also reassured St Albans residents. It is not drum and bass, it is a fitness festival, so there's lots of fitness classes going on during the day. Some of them are yoga, so they have to be very quiet. The noise will not be anything like that on the level of the Tear Fest. She encouraged everyone to come down as there are still tickets available. A spokesperson from St Albans District Council said the council was aware of the festival, which was considered by its safety advisory group. The festival was described as a small-scale music and arts festival with a focus on supporting local and national emerging artists, engaging communities in the arts and allowing people to enjoy the outdoors as part of the Great British Festival experience. She said the licensing team is investigating what happened and has requested CCTV and noise monitoring data.
Hello, I'm David. The headline of this one says, Bake Off helps pupils reach £70,000 fundraising target. The St Albans School held a charity Bake Off, which helped them reach a total of £70,000 for communities around the world. St Columba's College in King Harry Lane has spent years fundraising for CAFOD, that's the Catholic Agency for Overseas Development, and recently held a school-wide bake-off which raised nearly £500, bringing their overall total to £70,000. Bakers from the whole school took part, with teachers and house captains as the judges. Participants were encouraged to use fair trade products, and the event raised £489. Pupil Grant Papesh said the competition was fierce, as there were some amazing entries this year, including house-themed cakes, cookie monster cakes, a cake with teacher photos, a CAFOD cake, and a cake based on this year's school play, We Will Rock You. The school has also held other pupil-led projects with a week of social justice earlier in the year, where more than 80 pupils took part in a simple meal as an act of solidarity for those living in poverty. Teacher Joe Tatham, who has organised fundraising events over the past decade, said, "We have a long tradition of working with CAFOD, and our campaigns have been wide-ranging. From big fundraisers such as world record attempts and more than 12 years of sponsored bike rides, to many bake-off competitions and collections for in-school events like concerts and book sales. We've also supported many campaigns that have lobbied Parliament, carried out bucket brigades at short notice for emergency causes, and annually sell charity world gifts at our Columban Fair." The school has hosted guest speakers from around the world as part of its work with CAFOD, and local CAFOD volunteers have visited the school to deliver workshops. CAFOD's education resources have also been used as a framework for the school's social justice lessons. St Albans CAFOD representative Tony Sheen said, "It was overwhelming to see so many young people baking with such enthusiasm and knowing it was going towards a good cause. We'd like to say a massive thank you to all the young bakers of St Columba's College for raising much-needed funds for communities overseas and the continual support of all the teachers and pupils."
Hello, I'm Julia. Your votes are in. Budding artists win competition celebrating town. The winners of the Enjoy Harpenden More Art competition have been announced. Earlier this year, reception and year two pupils from Sauncey Wood Primary School were asked to draw a Harpenden-themed picture and enter it into an inaugural art competition. The pictures were then judged by members of the Enjoy Harpenden More Facebook group for a chance to win book vouchers, £50 for year two entries and £10 for reception entries. There were hundreds of votes cast from May the 1st to June the 10th. At a special assembly earlier this month, reception pupil Aria and year two child Amelia Rose were crowned the winners. Aria drew her favourite building in Harpenden, a church. She said, "I like the church because it looks like a king's castle." Head teacher at the school, Steve Lloyd, said they encourage creativity at Sauncey Wood. "At Sauncey Wood, we believe that creative skills aren't just about good ideas, they're about having the skills to make good ideas happen." He said this was clearly evident in the pupils' art produced for the newspaper, adding, "The ability to interpret, question, and think outside the box are equally as important as the ability to take in and learn information. At Sauncey Wood, we understand the important role that the arts play in developing curiosity, creativity, and an alternative means of engaging with academic education. Art and creativity also provide an important relief from the rigours of a busy school day, which has a positive knock-on effect on well-being and academic performance." This competition was run as part of the Enjoy Harpenden More, its ongoing mission to shine a light on the town and celebrate everything good it has to offer. Organisers of the competition, Hearts Ad reporter Frankie Berry, said, Well done to everyone who submitted an entry. They were all fantastic. I hope Aria and Amelia Rose buy some amazing books with their vouchers.
Hello, Susan here. Teenager auctions historic pictures for expedition trip to Botswana. A Harpenden teenager is auctioning off historic pictures of St Albans to raise cash for an expedition of a lifetime. Lucas Connolly is fundraising to go on a World Challenge Botswana trip with a team from Sir John Law's school, where he will contribute to a local project such as a school renovation. The 14-year-old needs £4,000 for the month-long expedition, which will take place in the summer of 2020 when he is 15. There are 6 framed photographs for sale, all believed to have been taken around the early 20th century. They show a view of Holywell Hill, the Red Lion Hotel, a lineup of the St Albans City FC team in 1913-14, a scene of Chequer Street, a shot of St Albans Clock Tower, and a photo of a shop named Rose and Angel. Lucas is inviting bidders to text in their price for individual items, and the highest offer at the end of July will win. His mother, Kathy Connolly, said, "It is a lot of money to raise in 18 months, but I am so impressed that they have the opportunity to do this." The pictures were donated to the Connollys by neighbours who were moving from the area and having a clear out. Lucas has been to Germany and France with Sir John Laws and away on family holidays, but Botswana will be the furthest he has travelled. Kathy described the Botswana journey as the opportunity of a lifetime. She said he is incredibly excited at the prospect. There is valuable and really important benefits to this sort of challenge. The pupils have to do all the fundraising with guidance and help from the school. That is such an important skill for them to take on in the future. They get a chance to visit places and get involved in projects that most people never get to. It is a fantastic opportunity. Lucas will also be fundraising at the Harpenden Highland Gathering in Rothamsted Park on July the 14th.
This item is entitled "Abuse Survivor Criticises MP for Giving Support to Johnston." A sexual abuse victim has criticised Harpenden MP Bim Afolami for supporting Boris Johnston in the Conservative leadership race. Earlier this year, Mr Johnston was interviewed by LBC and described police funding into historic sexual abuse was money, quote, being spaffed up the wall. Mark O'Sullivan, who writes and stars in heart-based comedy show Lee and Dean on Channel 4, has attempted to contact Mr Afolami to voice his concerns. He said, "It really made me so frustrated and angry. Putting all political allegiances aside, people are throwing their support behind someone who has said something so ill thought through about money being spent on child abuse inquiries. It's a terrible thing to suggest that money is being wasted, but to use that kind of derogatory language just turns it into something trivial." Mr Afolami previously supported Matt Hancock, but transferred his support to Mr Johnston after Mr Hancock withdrew from the leadership race. Mark said, "I am a survivor of child sexual abuse. I went to the police 10 years ago and the person who abused me was taken to court and ended up going to prison. It was a horrible, harrowing experience. Not only the abuse itself, but the whole court case. I was very pleased that I had to go through it because the person was put in prison and on the sex offenders register. So many resources and so much time and care went into making that happen by so many professionals who I have great admiration for. I am just incensed by it. I want some answers from Bim about how he can lend his support. That comment is one of a number of things that Boris Johnston has said about any number of people. I can't sit back and not say something." At the time of Mr Johnson's comment, his point of view was defended as an argument that money should not be spent on investigating historic sexual abuse where the alleged perpetrator is dead, when it should be spent on policing and tackling knife crime. Mr Afolami did not respond to this paper's request for comment.
This is a story about a reunion, and there's a photograph of a group of ladies, and they are Catherine Babier, Linda Janes, Sandra Padley, Marilyn Shaw, Susan Howe, Corinne Blythe, Elaine Winch, and Lindsay Pratt. It was back to their school days for a group of women in St Albans when the class of 1963 met up to remember old times. The former Townsend school pupils set up a reunion as some of them had not seen each other for 50 years. The group met at the Water End Barn. One of the organisers of the get-together, Lindsay Pratt, said, "I recognised everyone straight away. It was lovely." Attendees travelled from Australia, South Wales, the Isle of Wight and Surrey, and they even spoke to one ex-pupil on FaceTime in Sydney who was unable to make it. Lindsay, 67, recalled, "Being at Townsend in the 1960s would have been so different to how it is today. It was very strict and we were only allowed to be friends with other girls." She added, "We were in the building when Gardenfield School is now. One friend shared a memory of getting into trouble for being seen out with a boy, which was actually just her and her brother on a walk."
More than 200 people attended the opening of the new pavilion at Harpenden Cricket Club. The pavilion was opened on Sunday, June the 30th, by Harpenden Town Mayor, Councillor Brian Ellis. At the opening, the whole club, from under-12s to the captain of the over-70s team, took part in a cricket match, and an under-9s girls match was played on the outfield during the interval. The pavilion now features three changing rooms, a player's balcony, and improvements to the lighting, heating and lounge facilities. Harpenden Cricket Club Chairman Simon Wade said the new pavilion provides a tremendous facility, both for sport and community use. "We're already one of the largest clubs in Hertfordshire. Now we expect to grow further, particularly within the junior boys and girls programmes." Funding for the project came from Harpenden Trust, Harpenden Building Society, Sports England, and donations from members. And there's a photograph of Harpenden Cricket Club Chairman Simon Wade, Vice Chairman Simon Cornes, Bruce Claridge, MD of the Claridge and Hall, and architects Graham Reed at the opening of the new pavilion.
100th birthday. An allotment association in St Albans held a 100th birthday party for their oldest plot holder. Marjorie Ronald celebrates her 100th birthday on Friday, July the 5th, and is the oldest member of the Cottonmill and Nunnery Allotment Association, the CNAA. The society held a birthday party for her in its communal orchard on Sunday, the June the 30th, with home-baked cakes and Prosecco provided by her friends. Marjorie has been a plot holder and member of CNAA since 1999 and only relinquished her plot last year. After growing up in the New Forest, she married her husband Peter in 1939 and they lived in Germany for 10 years after the war before moving to St Albans and raising their three children. At her party, organised by Allotment Association member Irene Jacobson, Marjorie's friends gave her a plum tree named Marjorie's Seedling and a painted bench bearing her name. And there's a lovely photograph of Marjorie in the orchard.
Campaigners bid to reduce plastic waste across the district. A St Albans environmental campaign group is holding a prize draw in honour of Plastic Free July. Plastic Free St Albans is encouraging people to visit local businesses which offer free tap water refills and discounts on coffee for those with reusable cups. To enter the draw, participants must download the Refill app and use it to log themselves refilling their own water bottles in locations around St Albans. They can also take photos of themselves refilling their water, buying coffee in a reusable cup, drinking coffee in a cafe rather than getting a takeaway cup, or bringing their own coffee from home and send them to the group. The winner will receive either a Refill brand 500ml Chili's water bottle or a 340ml Chili's coffee cup in matte blue, depending on whether they refill water bottles or they use single-use plastic coffee cups. Plastic Free July is a global movement that urges people to avoid single-use plastics. St Albans MP Anne Main has also been campaigning against plastic waste and spoke in Parliament following an e-petition signed by 100,000 people which called for the eradication of unsustainable packaging. She said, St Albans cares deeply about environmental issues and I am grateful to the 464 people from St Albans who signed the petition. As a society, we cannot turn the clock back. What we need is to minimise waste from plastic by reusing it wherever we can and ensuring that we don't have a throwaway commodity. Last week, Mrs Main also chaired a meeting of the cross-party group on preventing plastic waste, inviting representatives from Starbucks to attend and set out what action they are taking to change customer behaviour. She said, the UK's coffee culture continues to grow, and that means thousands more takeaway coffee cups going into landfill every day.
A school expansion backed despite loss of playing field. Plans to extend a St Albans primary school have been backed by county councillors, but will now be referred to the Secretary of State amid concerns about the loss of a playing field. As part of the plans, a two-storey teaching block would be built on the playing field at St Peter's School in Cotton Mill Lane, providing an additional 8 classrooms and new sports facilities. The extra space would almost double the number of places at the school from 220 to 450. But Sport England has objected to the plans because of the detrimental permanent impact on the school's playing field. As a result, the plans for the site, which is in the Greenbelt, have been passed to the Secretary of State, who will decide whether to endorse the approval for the site or whether the plans should be called in for further consideration. During a Hearts County Council meeting on Thursday, June 27th, members of the Development Control Committee were asked to determine whether the need for school places met the special circumstances required to approve the development on the Greenbelt and to balance the need for school places against the loss of the playing field. Backing the proposal, Councillor Sandy Walkington said, "There's an absolute crisis of school places in the centre of St Albans, and there are no alternative schools. What happens is people come to St Albans and make a lifestyle choice not to have a car, but they are then allocated schools on the outskirts of the town, which is a nightmare. The expanded school would include a new dance and fitness studio and an all-weather multi-use games area. A larger dining hall could be used for indoor physical activities, and there are plans for children to use outdoor facilities at Westminster Lodge. However, Sports England say there will no longer be space at the school for the 60-metre running track or the mini football pitch, which is used by a local scout group as well as the school. Following the debate, councillors unanimously backed the expansion plans despite the loss of the playing field. Councillor David Barnard said, there is a clear demand for education provision, and it will be a great opportunity. The new sports facilities will be shared for the community, and that has to be a plus.
Process to force homeowner of uninhabitable site to sell is kick-started by councillors. Steps are being taken to force the owner of an uninhabitable St Albans residence to sell it to the council. A cabinet meeting of St Albans District Council, SADC, heard that there had been numerous complaints about the property over many years because of its poor condition. The CADC officer's report said the current owner bought it more than 40 years ago and shortly after intended to convert it into 2 residential flats. Although building work was started, an inspection in October 2018 ruled it would cost £100,000 to complete the outstanding work. The report says neighbouring properties on either side have complained a number of times over the years. These complaints mainly relate to the property attracting antisocial behaviour and the garden becoming overgrown. Councillors have also expressed concerns about the condition of this property. The owner claims he visits the property on a regular basis, spends time there, and has no intention of renting it out. At the meeting, the councillors voted to apply to the Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government for a compulsory purchase order, CPO. SADC leader Councillor Chris White said, "Do you expect us to have to go all the way through with a CPO, or are you hoping that this will, shall we say, unlock the problem? Housing, Inclusion and Protection Portfolio Holder," Councillor Jackie Taylor replied, "There have been previous examples whereby going down this road with a CPO has meant that properties have been voluntarily then brought back into use by the actual order, and thus the CPO in the end has not needed to go through. So it is a possibility that this will prompt the owner to bring the property back into use, but that is obviously not a guarantee. The homeowner would be paid the property's market value with compensation of 7.5% of that figure on top." Property, Commercial and Development Portfolio Holder Councillor Robert Donald said, "It would seem, looking through the report, that this is the most cost-effective way of bringing back a property that has been empty for really quite a long time and causing difficulties for the neighbourhood locally and for councillors. The exact costing of the CPO and address of the property were restricted by SADC."
Far too many children are drowning in a sea of online threats. Hertfordshire saw 43 reported sex offences with an online element against under-18s this year, a 34% increase over 4 years. Overall, in the east of England, there has been an 88% rise in cyber-related sex crimes over the last 4 years. A record 648 child sexual offences with an online element were logged by police forces in the region last year, compared to 345 offences in 2015-16. Children are increasingly being targeted on the web by sex offenders, with an average of 22 crimes a day taking place online across the UK last year, almost one every hour. The most common age of the victims was 13, but there are 185 offences committed against children aged 10 and under, including babies yet to reach their first birthday. Children's charity, the NSPCC, which obtained the data, fears that the figures may not reveal the true extent of the problem. For example, Hertfordshire's low 2017-18 figure of 6 may be due to potential under-recording of the role of online in these crimes and wide logging variation across the forces. Chief Inspector Michael Trotman, who is a safeguarding vulnerable children detective at Hearts Police, said Hertfordshire Constabulary considers the online safety of children and young people of paramount importance, and we take any reports of abuse extremely seriously. We believe the rise in the number of reports we have received in the last 12 months is largely due to increased awareness as well as improved confidence in reporting among young people, parents and society as a whole. The Constabulary investigate every single report of child sexual abuse we receive, and victims will always be supported throughout the whole process. You can report incidents online at ceop.police.uk. Peter Wanless, NSPCC's chief executive, said, "Behind each offence is a child suffering at the hands of sex offenders, and worryingly, we know these figures are the tip of the iceberg. Far too many children are drowning in a sea of online threats, so it's now time for the next Prime Minister, whoever he may be, to cast out the life jacket. He must hold his nerve and introduce an independent regulator to protect children from the risks of abuse and harmful content."
This item is about a street food festival. Thousands of visitors have been flocking to a shopping centre for a summer street food festival. Every second Friday of the month, Christopher Place plays host to an evening event boasting a variety of food, drink and music. The festival is open from 5pm until 9pm and currently attracts around 2,000 visitors. Stalls present include local traders Peddling Pizza, Tomoka Spirits, Tasty Bites, Vegan Treats and the Pudding Stop. Centre manager Catherine Morris said, "Wow, what a delightful surprise, an event aimed at boosting the St Albans economy in the evening. This has been a roaring success and it is a great start to the weekend, with families arriving for an early session and then our party people carrying on until late. It's fantastic to see everyone enjoying the delights of St Albans." The next street food festival is set to take place in Christopher Place on Friday, July the 12th. And there's a lovely picture showing Christopher Place decked out with flags, lots of people wandering around with plates of food, and there's a very cute little table with benches for the tiny tots to sit at.
A new festival to celebrate the animals and plants in Harpenden's green spaces is launching this summer. There will be sweep netting, wildflower planting, dead wood discovery, storytelling, bird watching, scavenger hunts and nature crafts at Wildfest, which is taking place in Lydekker Park. It's been set up by Harpenden Town Council as part of its Lively in Lydekker summer series, which sees three events in the park over the sunny months. Lyndhurst Financial Management is sponsoring Lively in Lydekker. Its director, Jeff Newman, said the Wildfest event should be a great occasion to celebrate Harpenden's fantastic green spaces. Other Lively in Lydekker events are a teddy bears picnic on August the 7th and music in Lydekker on August the 31st. Wildfest is on July the 13th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and there's no booking required.
Public halls attract thousands. The contribution of the arts and entertainment industry to the UK economy is often overlooked, but recent statistics from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport show that in 2017, the cultural sector contributed £29.5 billion to the economy, a 7.2% increase on the £27.5 billion it had generated the year before. This figure shows that the economic contribution of cultural industries, including theatre, galleries and music to the UK, has grown faster than the wider economy for the sixth time in 7 years. In St Albans City and District, arts, culture and entertainment is a big part of our offering to visitors. We're so spoilt for choice when it comes to the number of venues in the area, which means that collectively, our theatres and venues are often able to offer an extensive programme of shows, music and comedy that appeals to residents, but also attracts visitors, helping to boost the visitor economy. I've been general manager of Harpenden Public Halls for nearly 5 years, and prior to that I worked in live music promotion. The halls were opened back in September 1938 with the sole purpose of being a community venue, but its objectives have certainly changed over the decades. When I joined in 2014, my brief was to build a viable commercial entertainment programme, as well as maintaining and nurturing the relationship that already existed between the halls and the many community groups and charitable enterprises that use the venue for theatrical shows, film screenings and club and society events. The venue at the time was being grossly underused, and since then there has been a significant amount of time, effort and money spent in promoting the venue, rebranding with a new logo, building a presence on the various social media platforms and creating a programme of entertainment that appeals to wider audience. The venue brochure mailing list is 16,000 strong compared to just 3,000 when I first joined, and the footfall hit approximately 45,000 last year compared to a fraction of that in my first year. Music lovers can expect to see tribute acts such as Noasis, UK Queen and Absolute Bowie in the programme listings next to big name acts such as Martin Kemp, The Christians, China crisis and bad manners, while the comedians taking to the stage at public halls include Ed Gamble and the Lost Voice Guy, and of course a venue programme wouldn't be complete without the annual Panto, which is Beauty and the Beast this year. And while a significant number of visitors to the halls are from Harpenden, the venue sales reports show the next highest is Luton, Dunstable and Hemel Hempstead, with many acts drawing an audience from all over the country and even from abroad. This stronger programme presence, branding and footfall has created a springboard for progress, with plans afoot to develop a new cultural centre in Rothamsted Park. A new cultural centre fit for the 21st century will bring thousands more visitors to Harpenden and a much welcome boost to the visitor economy. Glenn Povey, General Manager, Harpenden Public Halls, writes on behalf of the St Albans Visitor Partnership.
Vickers A to Z Hitchhike Across Country for Counselling Charity. A Redbourne vicar is taking on an A to Z hitchhiking challenge to highlight the kindness of strangers. Reverend Will Gibbs of St Mary's Church will visit 26 places, each starting with the next letter of the alphabet. The 47-year-old vicar plans to set off on Friday, July the 12th, with just a toothbrush and £10 in his back pocket, without a fixed plan, and see where his adventures takes him. He will be fundraising for Youth Talk, who provide confidential counselling and support for local 13 to 25-year-olds facing anxiety, grief, low confidence and other issues. The vicar said it will be very interesting to see where he ends up and anticipates that some of the letters will be challenging to find places for. He is keen to show that the stereotype of clergyman is not always warranted and that vicars can have fun and a good sense of humour. He will have a GPS on his phone so that he can update Facebook, Twitter and the church website. The vicar said, "I just love people. It will get me out and get me talking to others. You don't see a lot of people hitchhiking nowadays, and I'm going to wear my dog collar. That may go for or against me. I'm not sure. So much of our life is very formulaic and planned, and I really am looking forward to stepping out of that. With the pressures on young people these days, effective counselling services are crucial." The vicar is married with two daughters. His wife, Claire Gibbs, said, "It doesn't surprise us that he is doing a mad challenge like this. We are looking forward to a quiet weekend." Chief Executive of Youth Talk, David Barker, said, "As a charity, we are reliant on the generosity and goodwill of residents and businesses across St Albans. We cannot do anything without the likes of St Mary's and Reverend Gibbs. Young people in St Albans will really benefit from the funds raised. A competition is being held to see if people can guess his return time."
Now we come to next week's radio programmes, which you may like to listen to. The Book of the Week on Radio 4 at 9:45 a.m. and repeated at 12:30 a.m. is The Fens, Discovering England's Ancient Depths. This is a unique portrait of a neglected but remarkable area of England. The 15-minute drama at 10:45 a.m. on Radio 4 and repeated at 7:45 p.m. is Dead Cert, a comic crime drama, created by Val McDermid. The composer of the week on Radio 3 at noon is Carl Nielsen. Sweet Sorrow, the novel by David Nicholls, is read by James Norton at 12:14 p.m. on Radio 4 and is repeated at 10:45 p.m. What is Lobbying? At 1:45 on Radio 4 and continued next week is an exploration of corporate political activity. There is an omnibus of this week's episodes on Friday at 9 p.m. on Radio 4. The award-winning novel, Eleanor Oliphant's Completely Fine. It is read by Tracy Wiles at 2 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra and continues next week. The Full Works Concert at 8 p.m. on Classic FM presents a varied choice of music, presented by Catherine Bott. As it's July and strawberries are ripe, it must be Wimbledon fortnight. At Radio 5 Live, This Brings Us the Action, starting on Saturday, but not Sunday, each day at noon. Wednesday is an exception when it starts at 12:30 p.m.
And now a choice of individual programmes starting from Saturday the 6th of July. At 1 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra, you have an opportunity to hear all 5 episodes of Daphne, A Fire in Malta, which was last week's fact-based 15-minute drama about the investigative journalist assassinated by a car bomb. The afternoon drama on Radio 4 at 2:30 p.m. is Between the Lines, which concerns a volunteer reader for a group of blind and partially sighted residents of a home and their life stories. Opera on 3 at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 3 is Mozart's Idomeneo. Archive on 4 at 8 p.m. on Radio 4 is God Bless the Prince of Wales, which tells the stories surrounding Prince Charles' investiture 50 years ago. This is followed at 9 p.m. by part 1 of the drama in the Reading Europe series, entitled Fear. On Sunday, 7th of July, the second part of Fear is at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. This is followed at 4 p.m. by Book Club, in which there is a discussion of Eleanor Oliphant's book Completely Fine, which is one of the choices being read on Radio 4 Extra starting on Monday, as noted earlier. A choice of musical styles is on offer for the evening on Radio 2 at 9 p.m. Bill Kenwright presents radio oldies from the 1950s and early 60s, while on Classic FM, also at 9 p.m, Catherine Bott explores the elements in music, starting with water. On Monday the 8th of July, you may be deterred by the title, The Pleasures of Brecht, Radio 4 at 9 a.m, but it promises an interesting discussion based on one of his censored poems, which details simple everyday pleasures and what they can tell us about our own time. At 2:15 on Radio 4, the drama is Deacon, Moonlight on Water, starring Don Warrington. Chat, music and phone-ins can be heard at 5 p.m. with Sarah Cox at 5 p.m. on Radio 2. The early evening promises 90 minutes of laughter starting at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4 with I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue. Then retune to Radio 4 Extra at 7 p.m. for the Morecambe and Wise show, followed at 7:30 by Dad's Army. The Radio 3 concert at 7:30 p.m. is a programme of Mozart's works detailing his travels around Europe.
Tuesday the 9th of July brings us an early start to our listening day. The Life Scientific at 9 a.m. on Radio 4 has Jim Al-Khalili talking to the DNA expert Professor King, whose work enabled the identification of Richard III's remains. The Dying of the Ice at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4 is an audio elegy and lament for the loss of the boreal ice at the North Pole. Stay with Radio 4 when at 3:30 p.m. in the series The Invention of Britain, Misha Glenny explores what unites and divides the separate parts of the United Kingdom. The concert on Radio 3 at 7:30 p.m. is given by The 16, who often visit St Albans on their choral pilgrimage. This time they're in York for the early music festival with music from the 16th and 21st centuries. Wednesday the 10th of July brings us a comedy at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4. All Those Women features the diverse lives of four women who live together. The Clintons at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4 is the first of three plays about the powerhouse couple. At 4 p.m. on Radio 4, in Thinking Aloud, Laurie Taylor explores the link between education and violent extremism. Time for some humour starting at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4 Extra, when Dora Bryan remembers her career on stage, screen and TV, followed at 7 p.m. by The Navy Lark and at 7:30 p.m. by Doctor at Large. Your choice at 9 p.m. is either on Radio 2, The Folk Show with Mark Radcliffe, or at the same time on Radio 4 in the series The Origin of Stuff, Katie Brann looks at that vital development in human history, the toilet.
Thursday, the 11th of July. And in open country, we visit the Hebridean island of Ulva, where there is a scheme to rebuild the abandoned houses. In Making History at 8pm on Radio 4, Tom Holland discovered how Britain's borders have separated communities. A complete contrast is provided in the programme following at 8.30, when Evan Davis asks, "Are the good times over for the people who manage our wealth?" He will examine all the hidden fees and charges which eat into our nest eggs. The Country Show at 9pm on Radio 2 presents a relaxing hour of country, roots and Americana. Friday the 12th of July brings our listening week to a close, starting with Madam Mayor, 11.30am on Radio 4. This is a new comedy about a loud and eccentric mayor. The cast includes Jack D and Harry Hill. The afternoon drama at 2.15pm on Radio 4 is the return of The Interrogation, the crime drama with Kenneth Cranham. More Radio 4 comedy at 6.30pm when Dead Ringers satirises the week's news. We return to the York Early Music Festival at 7.30 on Radio 3 when Florilegium perform Bach's Brandenburg Concertos. As ever, Friday night is music night on Radio 2 at 8pm. This time, actor Adrian Scarborough showcases double acts and romances from musicals and theatre and beyond. There is music by Berlioz, Irving Berlin, Sondheim and Tchaikovsky. Happy summer listening!
This is Rupert Evershed reading my monthly nature notes for the Hearts Advertiser. They might bug you, but insects sustain our world. The giddy heights of May's natural song and dance have peaked, and June stretches out with a verdant and voluptuous greenery bursting with life. All that birdsong, all that posturing, the territorial barking of the muntjac, and the dive-bombing aerial displays of buzzards have culminated in one thing: offspring. The air is filled with the sound of newborns squeaking, cheeping and pleading. One thing on their minds, food. It's a pleasant sound, and from every corner of my garden the calls of great and blue tits keep up a constant rhythm. Some from fledged birds and some from their less daring siblings still hold up in nest boxes and bushes. Starlings that have been largely invisible until now are suddenly descending in noisy flocks on the lawn to feed. If it weren't for their uniform squabbling, you'd think they were two separate species. The adults resplendent in glossy blue-black sheened feathers, but the new juveniles pale and plain in a simple brown plumage. To accompany this burst of new life, an equally vital explosion of insect life provides a feast for hungry mouths. I find myself increasingly stopped in my tracks by the sheer profusion of insect life, some dazzlingly beautiful and some verging on the bizarre. I sense myself undergoing a kind of conversion, or maybe an expansion to a world I have until now not really noticed in detail. With a new pair of binoculars that can focus right down to 4 feet, I can now examine the inhabitants of leaves, riverside reeds, and dragonflies that alight on the path ahead. What greets my eyes has been quite a revelation, an endless world of intricate beauty and diversity. Whether it is the glossy, metallic, green, swollen-thighed beetles resting on the petals of Michaelmas daisies, or the solid gold ingot of a female broad-bodied chaser, a kind of dragonfly, atop a twig, it seems the greenery of June is bejewelled with hidden gems at every turn. With each new discovery, red-headed cardinal beetle and long-jawed orb-weaver spiders just recently, a realisation is dawning that what I am looking at is actually the main act. The larger, more showy flora and fauna unsurprisingly capture our attention. Singing birds, shy deer, and floral blooms. But underlying all of them is a miniature world of insect life, feeding, pollinating, and supporting all life. From beneath the top of the soil to high in the atmosphere, our world is populated by a plethora of bug life critical to its survival. It has been estimated that on a summer's day, upward of 3 billion insects are passing over our heads. This aerial plankton is, of course, the diet of our summer-visiting swifts, already back over our towns and hoovering up insects and spiders in their wide-open gapes, either for themselves or their new brood in the nest. Looking through my binoculars recently into what appeared to the naked eye to be a crystal-clear blue sky, I could see hundreds of black dots rising on the breeze. In the same view, swifts scythed back and forth, enjoying this floating meal. Above them, higher still, another predator circled too, a cause of concern not just for the insects, but for the swifts too. Peregrine-like and as agile as a swift, the hobby is master of the summer skies. Visiting us from Africa to breed, this small falcon is perhaps the only bird capable of catching a swift in flight, and regularly does. Later in the year, the hobbies will be hawking dragonflies over pools and lakes, and watching a hobby feeding her 3 young last year, I was astounded at the rate of insect consumption. Just one short circuit would bring a hapless dragonfly back to the waiting young beaks. The frequency and efficiency of these forays emphasise the importance of abundance when it comes to insect life. With so much of our bird life in sharp decline, and a scientific report published earlier this year revealing that over 40% of insect species are nearing extinction globally, it is perhaps time to turn our attentions to this tiny world that we are apt to squash, spray, run from, and at best brush aside.
Right, this is Peter Burley bringing you a preview of events around the district from mid-July to mid-August. I would say we've just got back from a holiday of 2 weeks in Scotland, and we had amazingly good weather. Well, I gather everybody back here in St Albans was drowning in rain, so a real reversal of usual weather fortunes. Now, I wonder what the weather will be like for our summer events. Firstly, you will notice there's not much music in this session, and that's because it overlaps with the International Organ Festival. I'm not going to repeat all the musical events in the second half of that festival. Also, there's nothing on at St Peter's Church, and I think that's probably because it and other venues will be recuperating from the organ festival. So what there is of music is a couple of events at the cathedral, and the first one we've got is an event called Sounds Around the Abbey, and it's on Thursday the 25th through to Saturday the 27th of July at 7:30 each evening, and it features West End star Hugh Maynard with the Hertfordshire Jupiter Choirs, London Show Choir and local school choirs, and it's a fundraiser in aid of Rennie Grove, and it's a 3 nights running of musical entertainment, and tickets for that are all £20 and from the Cathedral box office. Second event is on Sunday the 4th of August. It's at 3 p.m. and it's an afternoon organ recital given by Andrew Lucas. Admission is free, but there's a retiring collection. Now, the other event, while we're in the cathedral, I will draw to your attention, is part of their public lecture series, and it's on Wednesday the 24th of July at 7:30 p.m. It's on Offer of Mercia, and it's entitled An Offer You Can't Refuse. Wednesday the 24th, 7:30 p.m., and tickets for it are going to be £10 each, again, available from the Abbey box office. Now, I think that that's going to be in the diocesan office on Holywell Hill, but looking at the programme, it's a little vague as to where the talks actually are. So if you're going, make sure you find out where to go. Now, another musical event of a very different sort at the Trestle Art Space, performance of Chicago the Musical. And this runs from the 24th of July through to the 27th. Performances every single day at 7:30 p.m. and then a Saturday matinee at 3 p.m. Tickets start at £10 and go up to £20, and they're available on the box office or online. Now, the Organ Theatre has two events for us. A musical weekend, Saturday the 10th of August, we have a performance on the theatre organ concert at 7:30 p.m. by David Ivory, and he is a popular East Anglian organist. Then on Sunday the 11th of August, there is an open afternoon featuring the collection of mechanical musical instruments. Doors for that open at 2 p.m. Right, let's move across to the arena, and we start off on Monday the 15th of June at 7:30 p.m. with Carole King Songbook. It's a review show, it's a tribute show to Carole King and her music. Tickets for that are going to be £24.50 or £22.50. Then on Tuesday the 16th of July at 8 p.m, we have Jimmy Carr doing a one-man show entitled Terribly Funny. You will have to hope someone's cancelled if you want to see that, because it says it's sold out already. And we, on Thursday the 18th of July at 7:30 p.m, we have The Real Thing, subtitled Feel the Force, which is a soul band. They'll be £25 or £23.50. And we have the Simon and Garfunkel story on Friday the 19th of July, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £23.50. And this is obviously a tribute show to Simon and Garfunkel. Another tribute band or tribute show, Saturday the 20th of July at 7:30 p.m, all tickets £22. The Gold Hawks will be performing the songs from Tommy the Album live on stage. So that's the Who's music by a tribute band. Then we have, on Sunday the 21st of July, 8 p.m, From the Jam, All Mod Con's 40th anniversary tour with special guests The Truth. And this is obviously a rock show with a whole variety of bands performing. Say Sunday the 21st, 8 p.m, tickets £25 standing or £27.50 seated. Friday the 26th of July at 7:30 p.m, Roy Chubby Brown. Tickets are £24, but you'll have to prove you're over 18 to buy one. And we have the Beach Boys Tribute Show, and that's going to be on Thursday the 25th of July at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £23 only. And I've got another one here which didn't get into the programme. On the 27th of July at 8 p.m, all tickets £20. Yet another tribute show, the Creedence Clearwater Revival. And then the last event we've got is a performance of Grease the Musical. And that is going to run on the 10th and 11th of August, but they're not quite sure yet what times they'll be performing it. And they also aren't quite sure what it'll cost. So it's check nearer the time if you want to go and listen to Grease. Now, up in Harpenden, we've actually only got one event in the public halls, and that is on Saturday the 20th of July, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £17.50, and it's a seated conference, and it's by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and it's a tribute band. They'll give you an evening of classic rock in the shape of an American icon. Now, for some drama. We all need a bit of drama. Right, we have got the Company of Ten performing Shakespeare's The Merry Wives of Windsor, and they'll be doing that in the Studio Theatre from the 17th to the 20th of July at 8 p.m. every evening. Now, that means I think there'll be no audio description performances. Now, over at Shaw's Corner, and I should have mentioned this last month, every Sunday afternoon over the summer, starting at 2:30 p.m, there's what's called a script-in-hand performance of Acts 2 and 3 of Pygmalion. And if you're struggling, that's the stage play written by George Bernard Shaw, which was turned into the musical My Fair Lady. And it is indeed just those two acts every Sunday afternoon. And the whole performance lasts for 1.5 hours, and there is an interval. But there are no formal plays as such. There's just the script-in-hand performances. However, just down the road, on the 20th and 21st of July at 6:30 p.m. with a performance in the Palladian Church at Ayot St Lawrence of Shaw's play Arms and the Man. So it's on the 20th and 21st, 6:30 p.m. each evening, and tickets for that will be £20. And it's available from a website which handles an awful lot of these bookings. It is www.eventbrite, and that's event, and then B-R-I-T-E, all one word, all lowercase, .co.uk. Now, moving back to St Albans, we have a play in the Maltings, and that is a play called Dalloway, which is an adaptation of Virginia Woolf's novel of the same name, and it's a one-woman show performed by Rebecca Vaughan. Now, she's done a number of one-woman shows here, which I remember previewing, and also we've seen two of them. So it's in the Maltings Theatre, 25th and 26th of July, 8 o'clock each evening. The drama isn't over yet. We have one last play, another Shakespeare one, and this is being performed at the Inn on the Park, that's in Verulamium Park. It's going to be the 1st and 2nd of August, both performances at 7 p.m, and it is going to be a performance of Much Ado About Nothing, and it's part of a countrywide tour, and it's being performed by the Drama Impact Group. Now, I remember this happening last summer. Over at Gorhambury, there's a range of events over the summer, and there's two which I'll draw to your attention. Wednesday the 24th of July, and it's a morning event, 10:30 to noon, there's going to be a talk by Hayden Williams, who's a fine arts consultant, on the Gorhambury miniatures, but it's not just a talk, there'll be a handling session of some of the exhibits there. That will cost you £15. But on Wednesday the 31st of July, again morning, 10:30 to noon, was the Gorhambury Tour, a screening and questions and answers, and this is not just about the house, but also about some of the restoration work being done there. And it's being given by Tessa Roberts, who's head guide for National and Decorative Fine Art. Tickets for that are £8. Now, down at our new museum and gallery, I'm sure there are lots of events, but the one I've got in particular in mind is an exhibition I would commend to you about conservation in St Albans. And it's being put on by the Civic Society, and it's celebrating 50 years of conservation areas in St Albans. There are a lot of other things going on in the museum, but that one has a certain historic interest, and definitely want to get down to see that. And on the same theme, you may or may not be aware that the new visitor centre at the cathedral is now open. That's the good news. But the bad news that I heard on Saturday is they found yet more bodies, and it's delayed sorting out the proper access. So you might want to put off your first visit to it to the end of July, when they reckon they will have got all the bodies disposed of and proper access off Sumter Yard sorted out finally. Now, on a very, very different note, we have a beer and fizz festival at St Saviour's Church, and that's running from Friday the 19th to Sunday the 21st of July. There'll be 25 varieties of beer and cider and a selection of sparkling wines. There'll be music. You can buy on the door for £4, or online via St Saviour's website for £3.25. And it starts at 12 noon on all 3 days, finishes at 11 p.m. on the Friday and on the Saturday, and at 6 p.m. on the Sunday. And now, a world-renowned event, the UK's Strongest Man Show, is coming to St Albans, and that is going to be running on the 26th, 27th and 28th of July. And it's going to be taking place at the Abbey View Athletics Track, and that's just behind Westminster Lodge Sports Centre, and near the Abbey Theatre as well, of course. It turns into a big family fair event. So as well as watching the filming of the event, and then you'll see it presumably next year on Channel 5, there'll also be lots of other attractions there, and it should be a good day out for the family. And the last thing I want to bring to your attention is another exhibition at the museum. And this one runs from the 27th of July through to the 8th of September. It's free. And this might strike a note with some listeners. It's 100 years of the Hertfordshire Women's Institute. So you can see what they've been doing for the last 100 years. And on that theme, I will just add one wonderful anecdote. This year is the 60th anniversary year of the Welwyn Archaeological Society. Incredibly, the founder member is still going strong, a man called Tony Rook, who does appear occasionally on television. But that was a lovely thought, that the person who founded it 60 years ago is still its leading light. On that rather happy note, I will leave you till next month.
When Helen Burridge, manager of St Albans Bid, came into the studio a few weeks ago, we talked afterwards about not just her job and what she does, but also the issues that she faces as manager and those that she's trying to work on. And one of the ones that came to the top is obviously retail, because the High Street, the business district, has a lot of shops in it. Now, Helen, the common view around the world, it seems, is that retail is on its last legs. The High Street's going to go, because we see chains closing, individual shops closing, because they're having a tough time. We know it's a difficult time for all sorts of reasons.
People will always need to buy things. There was a move post-war, the idea of the consumer and buying stuff because you could and because it was there and because it was new, reached a little bit of a climax, if you like, in the 90s. I read an article of an entire city that people worked in shops during the week in order to buy things in the shops at the weekend. And it's this sort of hellish circle down to the bottom where you just keep on buying stuff. I don't think that's where we are now. I think things like Blue Planet and people having smaller houses and moving more often means that people are not able to accumulate stuff in the same way. But also I think people, it's feeling a bit distasteful to just keep on buying. So people are choosing more wisely. They have less money in their pocket, as the phrase goes, because rents are higher, mortgages have cost more, people are still paying off student loans, wages stagnation, all those other things that we know about. But people are still buying things. People still need new clothes when the sun comes out and they've worn out the last outfit. The kids still need to have new shoes. You still get your saucepans that wear out. People also still celebrate things. There's weddings, there's births, there's all sorts of things. So there are many and various opportunities to buy, but the consumer is being much more careful about what they buy. They are, the studies are looking now, very well researched and quite savvy about what influences their buying decisions. And so within that climate, absolutely, the idea of browsing on the Saturday to go and find something that you might want to wear that night, that just doesn't happen anymore. People come on a Saturday morning and they know, if they haven't already bought it online by the Friday night, they know that there are three dresses that they want to try in that shop and that shop. They might even do a online order to deliver to store to make sure that their size is in stock. They can try on and return it straight away. That's relatively common, but the trying on factor is important. The comparison is important, but they already know that this store doesn't have the kind of thing they're looking for. This one doesn't. This one does. This one. They already know what the washing requirements are for that dress. And actually, that's not suitable to the requirements. All the things that factor what your choices are well researched way beyond they walk through that door in a large amount of the cases. And so the High Street isn't dead. The way that people use the High Street has changed enormously in the last 10 years. And bricks and mortar and the internet, the clicks, that whole bricks to clicks and the relationship between the two is a developing field that people are still really understanding how that behaviour changes. I don't see a future which only has clicks, but I do think that there will be a reduction in the bricks. There are a lot of interesting statistics around the relationship between bricks to clicks. Businesses see an increase in their web traffic when they open a store in a particular area. So even if that store then becomes an advert on the street, there will be an increase in traffic to that website and therefore an increase in purchases if they have a store. So there is a benefit there. But it might be actually that the stock volume isn't required as much because actually it's more of a showroom and an experience and you can walk through the Instagram world of another online retailer in a bricks and mortar store that's on Oxford Street but not actually buy anything there because you can see the kinds of things you want and then order them home.
Does St Albans strike you as a retail centre where there are lots of individual shops rather than lots of identikit shops?
There was a footfall survey done by a company that monitors footfall across the country, and they divided the country's cities, towns and villages into four different types and tracked the footfall footprint, if you like, of each of those four types of city. So one of them is the seaside town, the coastal idea where you go along. And so the peak is obviously in August and there are seaside attraction retail at that place, but a lot of them close over the winter. So the footfall drops off in the winter. The other kind is a multifunctional town where it kind of serves the business communities. And you wouldn't really spend a weekend away there or anything else like that. So I'm sort of thinking the sort of Hemel Hempsteads of this world that serve the purpose of providing a commerce and retail environment for the residents and a catchment around it. That's multifunctional. Then there is the retail or comparison town or city. And I would suggest that Watford is this kind of city, or Bluewater, for example, which has a high number of quality and value chains and independents, a large catchment and good, strong transport links where the peak of footfall is in December because that's where the retail shopping happens for Christmas. That's somewhere like the Watfords, the Oxford Streets, that kind of thing. There's a secret fourth option, which they've labelled as speciality, where the anchor is something other than retail. heritage, culture, a particular theatre, a particular attraction, and a good mix of independent and national brands. The national provides a little bit of gravitas, if you like, or a little bit of authentication that it's not just local shops, I'm using inverted commas. A wide catchment area and a longer dwell time because people are coming there to do things other than just simply shop. Interestingly, on that footfall map, the footfall is lower at Christmas than it is in August, because actually you're looking at weekends away, you're looking at summertime. Mooching around the shops as an incidental to the reason that people are coming is to see the town and not just find a dress that night. And I think St. Albans probably falls more into the speciality than it does the comparison retail model. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think knowing what our strengths are, in order to answer your original question, we have a good range of quality brands. And we have an excellent range of quality independents. And with that mix, you can be sure that you will get what you need for a range of different requirements, whether it's a tourism, an incidental, I'm just going to grab something while I'm here visiting with my friend, through to people that will travel significant distances across the country to go to one particular boutique that has actually the perfectly curated identity that really maps to who it is you want to be and what you want your lifestyle to be. And you know that their selection of goods will map and won't be something that you can find somewhere that the brand might be in your own hometown. And I think that's that combination that St. Albans does really well.
Those independents have to be telling the market what they're up to, even if the market doesn't walk past their shop window every day.
Absolutely. And the way that retail has changed is this idea of footfall being the panacea to all ills. I don't think that people wander around looking for A boards to tell them what they want. People know what they want. They've already researched it. Even if they don't know that they need it from that store, they're already thinking, I've seen leopard print everywhere. I want to find some leopard print for me, or I'm looking for a present for my mum, or whatever it is. They're following Instagram, the Twitters, the social medias of this world. They're seeing what their friends are doing. They're reading magazines. They are finding the trends, seeing things. And even if they're not high trends, the echo chamber works in retail as well. So you're following people whose style matches to what you want your style to be. You're looking for people, whether you like the style of Davina McCall or Theresa May, you will find an echo chamber of that style within the magazines that you choose, within the social feeds that you follow. That means that you will probably see similar styles and trends coming up, and you will, as a consumer, find the brands, or the brands will find you if they're using the search engine optimization properly. The brands will find you to say, yes, we're your kind of people, you're our tribe, we are doing what you need us to do, and we are selecting out of the myriad billions of options that the internet provides you with, and we are telling you that this is what you should be getting. And this is what will suit you for the wedding that you've got coming up, or your holiday, or whatever.
The retailer needs to understand how to use these new media and new ways of reaching out to a broader audience to encourage them to come in. Where does that link then to the bricks and clicks? Does the typical St. Albans, very good shop, we see so many quality retail outlets in St. Albans, do they have to have what you call bricks and clicks? Do they have to have the opportunity to buy online?
That's the point that a lot of independents who are, as we all are, time poor, cash poor, completely frazzled, trying to make sure that they've got in stock all the right things. They're thinking about three seasons ahead and working more hours than most, because if someone calls in sick, then the person that owns the business is there on the shop floor the next day. If you suddenly go and you need to create an online shop and you need to map your stock to that and make sure that it's all up to date, then suddenly that becomes an enormous investment. People are looking at virtual reality to be able to look around someone's store in advance, and AI and goodness knows what else. Ultimately, the individual shops need to see what is it that they can do to increase the number of visits to their store. What is it you can do to increase the conversion rate of visits to purchases? And what are the pain points that are stopping your customer doing that? And so is it that they see something that they like that you've put on Instagram? I've seen a lot of times people commenting underneath particular local independent boutiques that I'm thinking of, where they say, I've seen this thing. Oh my God, I wanted you to have it in size 12. Yes, we're getting some more on a Friday. I'll put you on a side. Give us a call in the shop. You don't get that from a national brand. And that's a really exciting way to have that dialogue. And all you're doing is snapping it and saying, look at this lovely person who looks a bit like you, is living the same life that you're living, and is buying this outfit from this store, and you can look this fabulous too. And I'm loath to mention particular brands, because guaranteed if I do, then somebody else will say that I haven't mentioned them. But there are some really, really exciting and different ways for different businesses to engage with different audiences. And even if it's sponsored posts or promoting hashtags and all that kind of thing, the way that Instagram Instagram works is you follow individual businesses or individual accounts of individual people or companies, but you can also follow hashtags. And the hashtag is, it's the element of discovery. With Facebook, it's a closed environment where you select whose stuff you see, sponsored posts notwithstanding. But with the hashtag, so we had a hashtag for a fashion event that we did in October called Style St. Albans. And so it was hashtag Style St. Albans. And what I wanted to see from that was anyone taking part in that event would have that hashtag as part of anything that they posted, so that if you're following that hashtag, you will see and you will be exposed to businesses that you would not otherwise either know were in the city or think that was for you. And so then we created that photography of these amazing outfits, but also shared the models' fittings and all the trying out in advance and everything else to really bring it home that this was a local but high quality event that was relevant to the people that were local, and created that momentum online so that you could see what brands were available to you. So the hashtag is a bit of a, I'm interested in that and I want to see more about it. So if you follow the hashtag St. Albans, then you will see everyone that comes to St. Albans here. And it might be that it's a gym or somebody taking pictures of daisies in Hartwood Forest, or it might be somebody going to Vermont St. Albans. But either way, you'll be seeing different things that showcase ideas that you wouldn't have been aware of before. And that's what I think is really interesting about social media, is that idea of discovery and the potential then to join up the retail to the bricks to the clicks, because then you're seeing ideas. This idea of infiltrating more information into your brain, you don't really realise that's how marketing works. And then you see a trend that appears, and then you start going there as well and spending your money. And that's obviously what we need to make the world go around. I think with BHS being turned into a hotel or whatever's happening to Debenhams, it's a really scary time for the big players. Business rates are really challenging. Rents are really challenging. And that race to the bottom in terms of price is really challenging, particularly with the showrooming element.
What do you mean by showrooming element?
Showrooming is a common complaint in St. Albans, but in a lot of shops, where the customer spends a good deal of time using the shop assistant's knowledge and experience to compare a number of different products, or to say, I need this, what kind of thing should I get? And then will either be as blatant as taking a photograph of the item and then saying thanks and walking out, or then bartering and saying, I've seen this same thing, or even standing in there and Googling it, finding a cheaper price online and then asking for the discount. And I think it's a really difficult one, because on one hand, the argument is, well, that's what the consumer's job is to do, to find the best value. But you've just used the ability to walk in and to use somebody's brain who's got a salary that needs to be paid, the heating bills need to be paid, and everyone else needs in that building needs to be looked after. And you've used that experience and that expertise, and then you're not thanking them with your payment. And I think that's really, really challenging. In the world of what's a reliable review, we've just discovered that Amazon has got, shockingly, millions of reviews that are completely created by robots. Which magazine is doing a good job trying to promote the fact that it is actually a legitimate reviewer? Good Housekeeping is doing similar. But everyone's trying to get this race to the bottom in terms of, I get what I want and I'll get the best price for it. I find it challenging when there is an instant, the high street is dying. Gosh, everything's so expensive. You can't have it both ways. You need to put your money where your mouth is.
And I guess we'll come back in another subsequent meeting and really talk about what is the meaning of the city centre, because there is an implied question there, which is, if you don't support, you don't have.
Absolutely.
And when you don't have, what's the point in being there? Will you stay at home all the time? You
know? Well, exactly. Now, yeah.
And, so always we've got the benefit different conversation. We've got museums and town halls, all that. We'll come back to that on another issue, but I think it's there waiting for us. The use of new technology, or the constant developments of new technology, we know it's going to be different and more next year. It's quite demanding, as you said in the beginning. I mean, you know, retailers are busy, small, particularly if it's a specialist shop. They haven't got time to develop. How can you help the stores? Or do they just have to find somebody who can be their webmaster, social media manager, call it what you will?
I'm a great believer in controlling the controllables and keeping it simple. So we've created a Shop St. Albans Facebook and social media feed on Instagram, and we have created the St. Albans gift card. So the social feeds aim to help emphasise promotions that local shops are having. So, for example, there is an amazing kitchenware shop in St. Albans that bakes fresh bread every day just to demonstrate how good their ovens are. And they often want to tell people about that. And it's a national brand. They only have the national social media feeds to talk about, but not all their shops do that. So they don't have a means to talk about that. So if we can help amplify what it is that they're doing, we can use our social feeds to do that. Otherwise, it's very much a case of controlling the controllables and making sure that what you're doing really, really well. Because as we all know, you have a great experience, you'll tell five people. You have a bad experience, you'll tell 50 people. The St Albans gift card is a really exciting project that I'm really pleased that we've brought here, which is a geographically limited gift card. And you can only spend it in bricks and mortar stores in the city centre of St Albans. So you can buy it online or you can buy it in person in the city centre. And in the same way that if you're wondering what to get for your awkward teen or your mother or any of those hard to buy for people or even your teacher, even, you can then use it to spend on shops, nationals and independents, on restaurants, on haircuts, on food and drink, in pubs. And it means that you're basically giving the gift of St Albans and saying to somebody, I think this city is so awesome that you will definitely find some way to spend 50 quid there. Go nuts. And it's a really good way to get people to walk in the city. What we've discovered is that there is about a 50% uplift in terms of spend because people in their mind have got a free £50. So they'll probably buy something that's worth £100. They might not normally, rather than saying, well, I'm going to limit it to the £50 that I've got. So if you're thinking of buying somebody an Amazon gift card or another shopping centre anywhere else, think about the local one. The nice thing is as well, it is only bricks and mortar. So even if it is one of the nationals that they could buy online, you can then do that instead. So I think that's a really interesting way of doing it. We're also looking at the Enjoy St Albans website and providing training to businesses on how to improve their SEO. It's all about links back and forth between your website and others. So even if your website is a showcase of a few good things that you're doing and then your Twitter and Instagram feed, that's enough, because then people might find that and then think about who those audiences are. Who are your brand ambassadors? Who can you get to talk about your business and how brilliant it is? Because then they will tell their friends as well.
We haven't got time to go on. It's a real pain. We're going to probably come back to retail in a few different ways as we look at the city in from different perspectives. Thanks very much.
Thank you.